2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Right, thanks to Jenny Gray. This is John Kenny in for Marie. This is Game On Thursday night. Coming up, Mark Langdon has the latest on the vacancy at the new camp, as one club legend is the early favourite to replace Ronald Koeman.
Rolls it in, kicks off, and it's Xavi lifts it home for the goal.
It's classic Barcelona football, and there's no answer to it. But look at how instantaneously he magnetises this ball with the one touch. It's fabulous.
We'll talk League of Ireland with David Snead and English Premier League with David Connolly. And in rugby, Bernard Jackman sets us up for an exciting few weeks with the All Blacks on the horizon.
We'll be lucky enough within this season to play them four times, and the more time we play against New Zealand, the standard bearers of how you perform week in, week out. They've been at the top the longest and consistently putting pressure on themselves to be at the best. And
more from Andy Farrell later on. In racing, Jay Mangan readies us for Down Royal. And in our Green Farm slot, Orla Walsh tells us how to fuel up to avoid winter colds and flu. If you want to get in touch, you can text us now, 51552 51552, or you can tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
And two erstwhile gentlemen joining me in studio, David Snead and also Bernard Jackman. Good evening to you folks. How are we doing?
Very good. Thank you, John.
Good, good. David, there is a little scandal raising its ugly head, sadly, in Iceland. I know we're going to talk about this perhaps later, and we need to go more in depth to it, but it doesn't look good for Icelandic international football at the moment, does it?
No, and you say scandal. It's reading just some of the overview of the piece of what's happening with the sexual abuse. It's actually quite horrific, and there's no other way of describing it. And it's one of those stories that people aren't aware, obviously, just in terms of like women coming forward and talking about the sexual abuse they would have suffered, and there's players implicated who've been key figures in the Icelandic international team and would have been kind of national heroes for in that country, and would have come to the prominence obviously within the Euros and the World Cup. And I think it's something that over the next few months, as more and more is going to be divulged about this, that it's just only it looks like it's only going to get worse in terms of some of the revelations that have been made and what's been happening, and it just makes for grim reading.
Sure. Well, we will go more in depth to that story perhaps next week here on Game On. Bernard, how's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, lots of change now from URC to international rugby, so free weekend this weekend, but we've got three nice fixtures. No tier two country, just, you know, Japan, Argentina and the All Blacks, with the All Blacks in the middle to look forward to. So yeah, definitely getting excited about it.
Japan, obviously, they're a team certainly much on the up. We saw them in the last Rugby World Cup, just how well they performed.
Yeah, they've been very unlucky. They because of COVID, they probably suffered more than anybody. They didn't really have a competition structure to go into. They're not in the Rugby Championship, they're not in the Six Nations, so they couldn't get the fixtures that probably they needed. Now they came to Dublin in the summer. They played the Lions, they played Ireland. I think they lost 39-31 against Ireland or something like that in Aviva, against the second string Irish team. But they were definitely rusty. They played Australia last week and put in a very good performance, and I think they're a big challenge. Yeah, the speed, if you want to see fast rugby, you know, check out Japan next week, because they're playing a different brand than anyone else in the world. And It's fast, but it's also very smart, and it's a joy to watch, to be honest.
Sure, no more than we've grown up watching Fiji, I suppose, like that. See, that kind of expansive kind of rugby.
Yeah, you know? It's incredible. But Fiji struggle at the moment in 15s because they don't have
good at sevens. Though, yeah.
They're brilliant at sevens. Yeah. But Japan just have this group of players at the moment who really buy into what the coaches are doing. And yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating game for us.
All right. Well, let's put the feet up for a few minutes. We're back with rugby and Bernard Jackman very shortly. But Mark Langdon joins us on the line. Good evening to you, Mark.
Good evening, guys. You okay?
Good. Yeah, Mark Langdon from the Racing Post. And Barca have sacked Ronald Koeman. That's kind of the big international story, really, this week. No surprise?
No surprise. I mean, after the weekend defeat against Real Madrid, the fans outside the new camp were making life very uncomfortable for Ronald Koeman. There was, lots of shouting, and his car was sort of being pushed around, and it felt like it was on the verge of departing. Then they lost to Rayo Vallecano, a small team from the outskirts of Madrid, and he was unable. Once that happened last night, he didn't really see out the night. I think that Barcelona would have done this earlier had they sort of felt that they could really afford it and that money would be no problem. There were some sort of humiliating defeats against, you know, Bayern Munich in the Champions League was one of those that just passed them off the pitch. Then they were thrashed by Benfica. If you've got excuses against Bayern, you've certainly got none for, you know, being outclassed by Benfica. There will be parallels drawn, I suppose, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And when you think, you know, did he only get the job because he scored a very important goal in the European Cup final, you know, for the club? I don't think his CV warranted getting the Barcelona job. I know things have been difficult with the departure of Lionel Messi and the sort of financial cuts that have taken place. But I still look at that Barcelona team and think that they're massively underachieving. Ter Stegen's a fantastic goalkeeper. Gerard Piqué, although coming towards the end, I still think is a centre-back that can be relied upon. Lenglet has, you know, been in the French squad for quite a few years. Jordi Alba, the left-back, was, you know, somebody at the Euros in the summer, looked very good. A midfield of, you know, Busquets and Frenkie de Jong and Pedri is absolutely fine. A forward line, albeit, you know, not as good as it once was, if you've got Memphis and Ansu Fati and Philippe Coutinho, I think you should be able to make that work. Not to the standards that they were previously, but to be competitive. And at the moment, they're not even doing that. They've become a laughing stock, really, in Spain. The style of football has been horrendous, and I don't think it needs to be that bad. And whacking long balls up to Luke de Jong, a sort of average target man, and, you know, just putting in cross after cross after cross with no real philosophy on how you're going to move the ball up the pitch. So I'm not surprised he got the sack. He'll blame outside influences. I think he maybe needs to look in the mirror, really, for where things have really gone wrong for Barcelona.
Yeah, there is one moment when I saw the car being surrounded by quote-unquote fans, where one guy actually leant on the bonnet of the car and took a selfie of himself and Koeman driving the car. I mean, it was getting ridiculous, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it was. And it's not nice to see somebody that, you know, was revered as a player. You know, he's, like I say, he scored a European Cup winning goal for them. And, you know, people like that should be able to go down in the club's history as being legends. And you always, I suppose, risk that when you come back as a manager. He would have not thought that it would ever have turned out like that, like it has done. But, you know, it was the way that he sort of man-managed players as well, Koeman. Luis Suarez scored a goal against Barcelona a couple of weeks ago and did the sort of phone call celebration because Ronald Koeman gave him about 30 seconds of his time when he told him he was no longer wanted at the club, and that was aimed very much at him. You know, even if they did have to make them cuts and sort of them tough decisions, you know, as a human being, you know, I don't think that Ronald Koeman covered himself in glory. He was really messy and with the press in terms of, you know, really clumsy with some of the things he was saying. I think he damaged the confidence of some of the younger players. You know, it was always somebody else's fault at Barcelona. And, you know, when you keep on hearing that, it's difficult to rally the players, I think. So
yeah, he came across as a very gruff kind of Dutch, that kind of way of speaking as well. It's just it's very much in your face, isn't it, with Koeman?
It is. I mean, and you know, you don't want to be too stereotypical, but I think that there is sort of this idea.
Yeah, deference to all my Dutch friends. You're right.
Yeah. So I think there is a sort of an idea that kind of that can be the Dutch way. They're very honest in terms of, you know, they do, and you think somebody like Louis van Gaal will always just say what he feels. You know, and Manchester United, I think that the press had a field day with some of the things that he was saying after matches. But he didn't manage. You know, Barcelona just has, yeah, it's such a massive club. For all that it's going through its bad times now, it's a massive club. There are so many media obligations. There are newspapers that are just dedicated to, you know, Barcelona and virtually nothing else. And you've got to, and he will have understood that, but you've got to be able to manage the environment that you're in at Barcelona. And when it starts to go wrong, as many managers that have lost their job at Barcelona will be able to say, and you know, you just, it's such a difficult one, that sort of momentum that's against you. It's so difficult to turn it around. And, you know, I think you've got to be charismatic. You've got to be daring in your football. You know, there's a sort of demand to play a certain way. if you're losing and playing really like turgid football, you're not going to last long. And he only lasted as long as he did because for two reasons. One, they didn't think they had a replacement. And two, they didn't want to spend the money to pay him off because they're already paying off other coaches, Kike Setien, for example. So they've got about sort of three coaches on the wage bill and soon to be another one.
David, what do you think? Xavi is in the picture, obviously. There was a replacement gone in interim for the time being with Koeman gone. But Xavi, in fact, even Messi said that he'd prefer to see Xavi in control.
Messi back as player coach, perhaps. I don't know. And I think what Mark is saying, it just seems to be a complete mess. Obviously, Sergi Barguan has gone in, who was the B team coach. Like, if Xavi is to come in, you can kind of see the thinking in this, in what Mark was saying there about the caliber of players and the type of players there. Like, one of the issues that's been there with Ronald Koeman is just the style of football and what's actually been happening. Like, you look at Xavi, disciple of Pep Guardiola. How did Guardiola get in with Barcelona? He took charge of the B team. They had a really impressive fourth season. I think they saw within the club of what he was capable of doing. Is it a bit of a risk when Xavi has just been in Qatar, not at a top level, but they're probably sensing that they maybe actually just need to reconnect that fan base? And if you are looking for similarities to what Mark was saying, even with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it's kind of similar to when Solskjaer did take over at Manchester United and finished in a toxic way with Jose Mourinho, where it was almost as much about reconnecting a fan base with the club and the players and creating that identity. That seems to have been lost at Barcelona. So if Xavi is the man to actually do that, well, let's say that would be his first port of call to actually do that, is to get those strong links back.
Yeah, it's funny, Mark, isn't it, that if this was happening back in the 1980s, the way managers come and go, Alex Ferguson would not be in charge of Manchester United. He took over in 1986 and he had to win the cup final in 1990 in a replay against Crystal Palace, basically to keep his job. He was given time. Managers these days aren't.
No, they're not. But, you know, they all sign up for it. I think they know how it is, you know, the expectancy now of a coach it is just different, particularly at these sort of super clubs, elite clubs. The turnover is great. It feels like the players don't have the sort of concentration span to sort of stick with the same guy for more than
minutes.
A couple of years. You often hear, you often hear about that message, changing. I suppose the one person who has, and he was champion in Spain last year, Diego Simeone, 10 years at Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Even he said, though, that he's had to change. He changed the formation at Atletico, partly because he said that, you know, teams had maybe worked them out. But he wanted to give the players a fresh challenge and a fresh voice and, something different to learn because he feared, that otherwise things would go stale. And so I think for any sort of manager to have any kind of longevity now, you've got to kind of give players sort of, different things to work on and like that. But more often than not, and Jurgen Klopp, maybe he could be somebody that sort of goes for that kind of time span, maybe at Liverpool. He's certainly got his roots sort of bedded in there now. But I think for most coaches, that's not really the reality. And, it's a couple of years and you're out. In terms of Xavi, he'll be given a certain amount of time because of the sort of respect and legendary status he's got as a player.
Oh, you think he's going to get the job then, yeah?
Oh, I'd be really surprised if he didn't. Yeah, I think it's more a case of compensation with Al Sadd in Qatar. Maybe that should be sorted out, in early November. Barcelona are hoping for, compensation of around about €1 million. Barcelona haven't got much money, but hopefully they can raise the funds for that.
I'm sure they will.
It's a gamble, but yeah, I'm sure they will. But it's a gamble. Of course it's a gamble. You know, he's somebody that's not managed at any kind of level that he'll be going to. But I think Barcelona feel like they need to get their identity back. And ever since Pep Guardiola left, they've been looking for somebody to kind of fill that void, the way that he connected the fan base with the players, with La Masia, the academy. You know, it all worked together. He promoted players from sort of the youth team. He managed the B team. The fans responded to that. The players responded to the absolutely sort of the demands of that crowd, and it all worked wonderfully well. There aren't too many Pep Guardiolas knocking around. That's the problem for Barcelona. and maybe Xavi won't reach that standard. But I think they reached a point where they knew that Ronald Koeman wasn't good enough. They don't know if Xavi and is good enough, but they're prepared to take that risk. And there are some people that think that if Xavi does go back, he was kind of burning himself because, you know, it's not a good situation to go into at Barcelona. And, you know, if you do badly, you may be there 18 months and then they get rid of you. You don't get that opportunity again. I suppose you could draw parallels there maybe with somebody like Frank Lampard that got the Chelsea job too quickly, according to some. And, you know, it didn't last too long. I tend to think differently to that. I'm of the opinion that Barcelona is actually not a bad job to go into at the moment because expectations are so low and I don't think the players are quite as bad as they've been made out to look. This is their opportunity to show that it was the, you know, it was the manager's
prove other people wrong, yeah.
sort of wrongdoing and fault. Maybe in that it's a good thing.
All right. Mark Langdon, Racing Post, thanks for joining us. This is Game On here on RTE 2FM. John Kenny in for Marie tonight. We're talking rugby with Bernard Jackman after these. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on rugby. Welcome back, Game On. John Kenny with you until 7 o'clock this evening, and it is Bernard Jackman in studio talking about rugby. We'll get on to the autumn series and challenges for Ireland very shortly, Bernard, but this has raised its head again, if you excuse the pun. Concussion. Caelan Doris has been speaking to the media, and he's actually publicly stated he's coming back slowly but surely after concussion suffered. And he's been talking today about his own experience of concussion last season, starting with what symptoms he experienced.
So some cognitive ones, some around sort of concentration, attention, short-term memory sometimes, a little bit of speech stuff. But again, it's kind of, it's hard to know when you're getting a few of these knocks and you're sort of hyper aware, hyper vigilant of any deviation from normal cognitive function. So any sort of can't remember someone's name or the name of something or forget to do something, you're attributing it to these knocks, which might actually be the case. So there's probably a bit of worry around it as well. My initial cognitive testing was pretty good, a little bit down. And then I did another one a couple of weeks later and it was further up. So there probably was some it was a little bit down from the knock, but it's back, thankfully.
Yeah,
I think back to my baseline, maybe not the normal baseline.
Yeah, delighted to hear it. You're obviously wearing a scrum cap now, I presume. That was probably recommended to you, was it?
It actually wasn't, no. So I think most scrum caps are sort of seen as just protecting from cuts and protecting your ears, whereas this new one, it's actually a medical device. It's classified as a medical device and has a fair few studies behind it showing that it reduces force to the head. So I was talking to the company towards the end of last year and then just decided to give it a crack this year. There's a fair few things you can do to prevent concussion. Tackle tech is obviously huge. Neck strength as well to protect the whiplash effect. Timeout if you're having a few. And then building up that threshold again. But I thought having an extra layer of foam around my head will do no harm. So I'm going to try it for a while anyway and see how it go. I'm happy enough for it at the minute.
Caelan Doris there, Bernard Jackman. I've experienced concussion before. I played schoolboy rugby for Terranure College and I got concussed. A player came into the side of my head. I had a month off school with migraine and had a long migraine spell. Thankfully, I don't have it anymore. But it's now back in discussion as well. And I also saw a thing today where some hookers are complaining about the fact that they could be into shoulder injuries and head injuries because of the new set rules in rugby as well. What did you think of what Doris had to say there?
I thought it was very honest. I mean, we don't really ever, or definitely don't frequently hear players talk about their symptoms and what they miss. I thought it was really good last year when he took a break from it. You know, there's so many players, I think, who keep it to themselves and just play through it. And unfortunately, it's one of those injuries where you can sometimes play through it, or and to be honest, more often than not, you can, and you might get lucky short term, but we don't know what kind of damage you're doing medium to long term. And certainly from myself, at the end of my career, I was a lot more susceptible to what I call a bang, but basically my tolerance for contact led to me being concussed a lot more often. So potentially that was shortcuts I made earlier in my career. So
Did you have any side effects on that?
I did at the time. Similar to you, I got a really bad bang once playing for Connacht, and I ended up not being able to kind of leave the house and stay in a dark room for about 2 weeks. And at first, then I was fine for 5 or 6 years, and then it was at the end of my career, I just, like, even the engagement in the scrum, it's interesting you mentioned the hookers talking about that actual load. So basically what they did was the rule makers took the hit out of the scrum, and I was getting concussion-like symptoms on the hit because the hit was so big. Like, we used to spend so much time trying to win that race across the line, that imaginary line, to win the hit. And the idea was hit 80%, push 20%. So if you win the hit, it's very easy. But now they've taken that away, and actually what's happened is a lot of the pressure, basically the eight bodies on each side, so 16, the force of 16 men, is at a certain point in time just going through the hooker's head, because they're going head to head, whereas the props have their arms to bind, so they're putting pressure through their hands and arms. So that's an interesting one that they probably hadn't thought about, that's become an issue. Now, for the front rows in general, the hit is gone, so that you shouldn't be getting cussed. Props shouldn't be getting cussed at the engagement anymore. But look, I think it's great from Doris. I've seen some speculation on or some questions around on Twitter around the headgear, around the studies. You know, there's a neurosurgeon that I follow, and I would have spoke to when I was suffering concussion, Dr. Willie Stewart, and he just kind of made a comment on Twitter, and I've asked him to clarify it around what these studies are. But if there is headgear out there that reduces concussion, or makes it safer, I would be all for it, for sure.
Do you know what he was talking about there? That's that new...
N-Pro. Look, I think it sounds great. I just haven't, to be honest, I believe that there is studies to show it's effective. I just haven't seen those studies.
But he's right about the original scrum cap. That's just basically for protecting your...
Yeah, and that was the big thing.
It's just a cloth cap.
Really good point, John. That's more for cuts and not getting cauliflower ears. And in some ways, I know some surgeons, specialists, felt that sometimes the scrum cap gave players false sense of body armour and made them braver, or made them, you know, feel they could be less careful with their tackle technique. I thought what Doris said around tackle technique, around neck strength, around making sure you stay out if you are concussed, they're the key messages. And if we can get a scrum cap that's effective and proven, well, then I'd be all for that. But I said at the moment, I haven't seen the data on that. But I look at Doris as a phenomenal player. And I think, again, it was a good sign of how in Ireland, under the RFU, there is that patience there for players to be very, very careful with injuries like that, which isn't necessarily the case. In France, my experience in the top 14, they take concussion very seriously. There's an independent doctor in Paris that everybody who gets concussed has to go see. He's not afraid to pull players out. But just in general, I would worry our players sometimes be under pressure to play. Maybe not from the coaches, but internal pressures to make an international team, to get a new contract, to get win bonuses, etc.
Short span, isn't it? Of course, being an international footballer. David, this has actually been brought up with football as well, isn't it? With the heading of the ball, especially from the old leather ball, the guys like Jeff Astle, we know very publicly, and, you know, motor neuron disease permeating through some old olden day footballers, for want of a better phrase.
But I think that's even the issue, where it's kind of seen as a problem that was there in the olden days, so to speak, but it's really not. And it's like what Bernard made the point there of actually a player being aware of, well, this is the issue, and sitting out and not playing because it's for too long, as what Bernard was saying. And maybe it's a thing in rugby that's happened because obviously with the professional coming in and how much is on the line for a new contract, getting, staying in the team, the bonus that's there. For so often, players don't want any excuse to come out, and you'll often see in matches where they try and stay on, there's only even,
and it can't be up to them anymore.
That's what's obviously happening now. Even with the League of Ireland, only happened last week, where Shamrock Roberts had an extra sub in the game because he had to take a player off who was concussed. And like, that's just a very, very simple and basic way of making sure that it's taken out of our hands as well, where, and not to be bad about it, and denigrating certain managers for saying they'll put player safety at risk, but if they also know that they can do it, they can make a sub, and it's not affecting the overall game plan for them, that is going to help. But it definitely comes down from my point of view, looking at it from the outside, you just think it's the educational point of view of knowing that, like, that false sense of security of in rugby if you're having a cap on. You've seen it with actually when Petr Cech fractured his skull and he came back and he wore that cap for the rest of his career, and it was obviously different in the sense that he had a very long recovery and he came back when it was safe to do so. But you would just wonder that issue of maybe players thinking they're safe when they're not, and it has to come down to maybe being properly informed of what the risks are.
Yeah, during my career there wasn't a HIA process, so effectively, you know, I had some concussions on the field, and even though a lot of fans and coaches would have said I was holding the team back, you feel again the team is need you on the field, so, you know, I lied to medics, etc. Whereas I think being able to get off the field, get into a dressing room or medical room, the game still goes on, you know, and then you can logically make a decision and agree with the medics if they tell you you failed a test. So I think that's been a really good introduction into rugby, and, you know, potentially other sports could look at that as well, where you can get the player off the field to make the assessment. If he passes the test and everyone's happy, it's a false alarm, you can go back on. But trying to make that decision, you know, in a minute with the magic sponge and, you know, the crowd there and pressure to stay in the field, it's very difficult.
Yeah, but I know. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
I was just going to say, even what you were saying there, Bernard, though, about the fact that, like, you had that bang and you couldn't leave your room for 2 weeks until then.
Yeah,
like,
I know. It was like, it's frightening. It's frightening. It was, as I said, I actually was like Bambi on ice for the rest of the game, but that was a long time ago. Thankfully, Caelan Doris has brought this to the fore. Just before we wrap it up, I want to talk obviously about the Autumn International Series and the challenges for Ireland. Andy Farrell has been talking today.
We all know that the games that we've got coming up are going to test us massively. Japan, we've had trouble with them in the World Cup, and you know, we played them in the summer, and we've got massive respect for them, how they play the game. They've got threats all over the field, and we love playing against Japan. So that's going to be a massive challenge first up. You know, we know that they've been together for a couple of weeks and had a hit out against Australia. So we know the challenge is there, and we've got to get up to speed as soon as we possibly can and perform really well. And then, you know, the following week, we've in my opinion, you've got the world's best team coming to the Aviva. So everyone's going to get excited about that. And you know, Argentina have been playing away for 5 months, and we know how physical and abrasive and emotional that game's going to be. So this is perfect for us. You know, it's top level rugby is all about consistently performing as week in, week out as best you can, and that's the challenge ahead of us.
You know, Andy never really goes in depth with his interviews. I mean, it's pretty cliche ridden that. But in fairness to him, he's right about what he's saying. This is an exciting series of games, isn't it? Japan, Argentina, and the All Blacks.
Yeah, certainly compared to Joe Schmidt, who tell you every Japanese player and their parents and their lineage. No, it is. Yeah, it's pretty standard stuff. I think he's keeping it simple. It's all about squad morale. It's kind of like a football manager to a certain extent, and, you know, get the right players in, keep them happy. And I'm sorry, that's not degrading tactical or technical in soccer, but compared to Joe Schmidt, who was all about, you know, roles, responsibilities, every single detail, it does seem to be, you know, create a good leadership group, said, make sure the environment's right and let him play.
Do you rate him?
I think the question mark is still out, to be honest. Yeah. We've had some good performances. Obviously, we finished on a high, beating England, but England had a review after that was Six Nations. I mean, they had a massive drop-off after the World Cup. I think this is a big block for him. I think, you know, he will really need to see some consistency, given there's no easy game and given we're going to Six Nations and we're not far off a World Cup. I think there's question marks around tactically how Ireland are playing. There hasn't been a real clear vision and philosophy, either defensively or attack-wise. So, the pressure's on.
All right, Bernard, listen, thanks for joining us. And somebody says, Bernard, a good AIL match on the Aviva pitch this Saturday, Lansdowne versus Young Munster. That's Johnny Casey in Limerick.
Yeah, there's some great AIL. Anyone who's missing pro rugby, get out and watch your local club. But that game, Lansdowne, Young Munster, top of the table class, should be a cracker in the Aviva.
Great. Thanks for joining us. That's Bernard Jackman, and we're back with more football after this.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
More football. Bernard Jackman has left the studio. We'll be talking to David Connolly, former international footballer and Premier League footballer indeed, but David is still with us. Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night on the cusp of the title in the League of Ireland. We've got live coverage of that on RTE2 television. I'm happy to say I'll be up there tomorrow doing commentary on that game with Pat Fenlon, so they can win the league title, and deservedly so. Stephen Bradley deserves a lot of credit, I'd say. Two wins or two titles in a row. The second one is not quite there, but they will do it.
Yeah, and I suppose even going into this season, like, they've just been, even though they're 13 points clear of St. Patrick, there's been times where it hasn't been so fluid for them, but they are just one of these teams who just can grind out results when's needed, but are also just capable of totally overpowering teams by outplaying them, or when needed, going a bit direct. And what's been interesting for this season, if you're looking at it, is coming into it, they were kind of getting a bit of criticism. There was a bit of needle coming into it because of obviously what happened last year and the kind of a bridge season because obviously of COVID, and there was some feisty remarks from Pat Hooban at Dundalk, which basically saying they can't be the real champions because it was only, 15, 16 games in the season, and there was a bit of scorn poured on that title when in reality, if that season had been a full one last year, Rovers would have probably still maintained their unbeaten streak and would have won it by a lot more. And I think what was even better about that, those comments from Pat Hooban, obviously, who's been a tremendous player for Dundalk and had enormous success there, was they came on the official website. Normally, you kind of, when you get stuff on the official website, it's kind of maybe a bit more bland and it's not as antagonising. And I think that's kind of stuck in the craw a little bit. And when you look at what the job of Stephen Bradley has done, losing Jack Byrne, losing Aaron McAniff, the two best midfielders, 22 best players in the league last year, and then to still be able to rebuild the side a little bit, brought in obviously Richie Tail midway through the season, and that little bit of finance does help. But I think the big thing is with just the structures that they seem to have in place with Rovers and the style of play they have and how they go about their business. It's not a case of, right, well, you lose your two best players and we'll just try and pick two lads somewhere else and throw them in and they're the two best players and hopefully it'll work. Like, it's the systems that they seem to have in place and be able to really get the best out of their players and the squad where every single person knows their roles. And I think that's just that depth of understanding. That's what's really set them apart from everyone else in the league. And I just do think he actually deserves an enormous amount of credit, because it's a manager who, when he took the job over from Pat Fenlon, when Rovers were on a bit of a spiral in 2016, and we were talking earlier about managers not having time, like Shamrock Rovers kind of got a bit trigger happy after Michael O'Neill, like they sacked Stephen Kenny after 9 months. We see where Stephen Kenny is now, and I think the Rovers board kind of took a lot of deserved criticism for how they were running the club, essentially. Like, things were a mess for a few years. But Stephen Bradley, since he's come in, they've had that faith in him. They've, for a couple of months, and even a couple of seasons at the beginning of that, like, he was sometimes derided when he would use the word project. And you're kind of seeing now the fruition of that and how strong they look and on a level compared to anyone else. And at the moment, this season, there's been no one who can touch him. But what's going to be interesting is what will happen next season when rivals will obviously regroup. There's going to be a stronger push from other teams too, and that's going to be another challenge as well as maybe adding to see what they can do in the Cup and in Europe as well.
Yeah, not a fait accompli though. Finn Harps are scrapping for their lives, so Molly might come up with a clever plan, or cunning plan as they say. David Connolly, good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, David.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good. You?
Good, can't complain. Just moving to matters across the water before we could talk about the English Premier League. Mick McCarthy losing his job at Cardiff. You know a little bit about this.
Yeah, I mean, tough one, because obviously I know Mick so well. And look, it was difficult. I had to do a little piece in the newspaper before the game at the weekend, and it was kind of written as if he'd lost his job, to be honest, because you just couldn't see any other result. I mean, they were playing Neil Warnock, former Cardiff manager, now at Middlesbrough. Sol Bamba was going back. They'd lost, seven in a row, six at home. It just seemed no way back for Mick. And I think it's tough, obviously tough for him to take. But look, he's been around the block. He knows results. It's a results business. But it's sort of hasn't really gone well for a few Ireland managers. Him, Chris Hughton, didn't quite work out for him at Forest either, and they're now going well. And I think it was best for everyone that Mick moved on. It didn't look like it was going to improve, and that might not be whoever's fault, we don't know. But look, creatively, they didn't have enough. They lost a lot of players in the summer, didn't add to them. Kiefer Moore wasn't scoring goals. I mean, they were shipping goals. It was kind of all over the pitch, really. So, it's tough one for him. But, you know, I couldn't really see anything different at the weekend.
His last job was in Cyprus, and then he goes to Cardiff to lose 8-9 in a row. That's probably his last job in football, would you think?
It might be. I mean, it might be. I mean, there's a few. Obviously, Steve Bruce has said the same recently. You know, but look, I guess a time away from football, you know, time could be a healer. The only thing I'd say is a lot of managers probably look at Swansea. I don't think how Russell Martin's done at Swansea has really helped in terms of instilling a style of play and a brand of play. You know, a lot of young managers, another one, Forest Green Rovers at the top of League Two. You know, the young manager, and you know, there's links of other coaches, young coaches maybe getting that job at Cardiff. So, you know, it might be through no fault other than I think it might be time for some of the emerging coaches to have a go. So, yeah, possibly it might be. You never know.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's got to go hungry, Mick. I mean, he's had a very good career, and we wish him obviously the very best in the future. On to the Premier League. I know we've got no programme here tomorrow night, so we're going to talk a little bit about the matches of the weekend. Some of the big games: Spurs against Man U, Saturday 5:30. Chelsea are at Newcastle. Liverpool at home to Brighton. And Manchester City, they're at home to Crystal Palace as well. How do you see those going?
Well, I tell you what, the Liverpool one is going to be fascinating because, you know, the form they're in is just, you know, incredible. Demolished United, can't do anything wrong. Loads of changes in the cup. You know, didn't really matter to them. The amount of goals they scored already, 27, whatever it is, you know, putting five past people, you know, brushing aside Atletico Madrid. Up against a Brighton side, to be honest, who tried to go toe-to-toe with Man City. I don't know if you saw the game, but little bits you wouldn't have seen in that game. Yeah, there's little bits, right? You wouldn't have seen what Graham Potter tried to do, which was he tried to basically man-mark the best ball handlers in the world, you know, Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden. And I think if Phil had gone to the toilet, you know, their centre-halves would have followed him. I mean, it was... beyond belief, to be honest. And they were punished. They were 3-0 down at half time. Now he changed it second half and he said, right, okay, forget the man-to-man marking. Let's just stay in our position. And they were much better, but the damage was done. What he does against Liverpool, I do not know. I don't think he'll be as brave. I think, you know, they'll be a little bit wounded, Brighton, but I can only see Liverpool winning that one.
Did you see Divock Origi's goal last night against Preston?
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable goal, and he can't get in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what David thinks on this, but you've got Pep Liners saying, you know, he's one of the best finishers in Europe, and a lot of people are going, well, hang on a minute, you know, is that a bit outlandish? Or obviously he's not going to play because he's got the likes of Mo Salah, Firmino, Jota, you know, they've got those, he's got those players in front of him. But obviously, when you get the chance, you've got to take it, and he did that.
Just some talk. Wasn't there talk of him possibly going to even Barcelona as part of their rebuilding? I watched that goal and I felt as if my ACL was going to go just watching it.
I don't know how he got it in.
it was tremendous. But even like the point David's making there, if you look at it, like, I think this could be something a bit different that we haven't seen in the Premier League for a while, where it looks as if it's now going to be a proper three horse race for this title. They're already peeling away on a West Ham are in fourth. It could be a bit much for them to hang on in that fourth
spot
over the course of the season.
So there's no way.
But it's going to be fascinating because like you look at it in terms of what we were chatting about earlier on throughout the show so far. Like you have three of these clubs who are becoming super clubs, and you have the three best coaches in the world, and it's just going to absolutely be fascinating to see how they go throughout the course of the season. I think even looking at it, I was looking at the fixtures earlier, like a bit of a throwback, all three fixtures kick off at 3 p.m, which is a bit interesting. But that whole back and forth throughout the season as it goes, like when obviously fixtures kicking off at different times and all the rest of it, but who's going to hold the nerve? And it's going to be fascinating because like for so long, well, for the last few years, it's been Liverpool, Man City. Now you have Chelsea thrown into the mix with Tuchel, and obviously Lukaku's obviously out injured at the moment, but when he comes back, and it's just going to be something we haven't seen for a while, and it's just going to be very interesting to see how it pans out. And if you're not looking at the moment, Chelsea are top. They're probably the less, I suppose, flamboyant of the other teams in terms of how they're
playing,
but there's a relentlessness about them and how they can do
Lukaku
things.
And Lukaku is actually, he's tailor-made for that team, I think.
Well, yeah, just he seems to be a bit of a focal point. It was something that we're maybe missing, and obviously Timo Werner offers so much. But yeah, it's just, and even like you saw what Liverpool did to Manchester United at the weekend. Like I said, there was teams looking at that, and you're probably looking at Mo Salah now. I made this point the other day. I think he's probably going to be the Ballon d'Or winner if he keeps his form up and how he's going in Europe as well. And I think for so long, people sometimes have maybe derided about some of the people going about the Premier League, the best league in the world, and some of the hype that's around about at the moment, and some of the players that are there and the coaching that's on show there. It's living up to the top billing. Like,
okay, a couple of minutes left on this, David. I know we got you on the phone, on the line now. United are at Tottenham on Saturday. Your opinion, will Solskjaer survive?
Geez, I think he will, but I think he's a lucky man. You know, I had these point stats from last season, and basically since he's been in charge, I think he's running nearly 50 points behind the likes of Jurgen Klopp and Pep. You know, which is kind of no surprise. But I guess the point is, you split that over three seasons, and he's not really getting close enough to those two. I mean, despite Varane, despite Ronaldo. And that is a worry for them. You know, I think Spurs is a game that sometimes Ollie gets a response, right, doesn't he? He seems to get a response from his players in the following game.
Yeah, but Maguire has said today, we've regrouped and we're ready to go again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what you hear, though. This has happened an awful lot. I mean, you know, does it help if Pogba's not playing? Maybe. Still, I got issues all over the pitch. You saw what Leicester did to them, you know. Johnny Evans, I mean, you know, they probably had the best centre half and they let him go for nothing. You know, Johnny Evans absolutely brilliant for Leicester. You know, he was picking passes against United, both flanks, and absolutely dominating them. I don't know. I think he will survive, but I think that, you know, the writing is on the wall because they're not pressing. The stats tell you all this, you know. They're not stringing passes together. They're not winning the ball back high enough like they used to. All the metrics that they had last year, they're all down on them. They are all down. Now, whether that is being put in front of Ollie, you know, by the analysts at the club or the hierarchy and saying, look, the stats don't lie. Forget the points and where we are. You know, we're not winning the ball back. We're not winning it high enough. We're not stringing as many passes as we were last season. Is that right because of Ronaldo? Is that because of X, or is that because of your shape, etc.? So, he must have a battle on his hands. He's obviously got a battle on his hands, but you know, they're not going to dispense with him, I think, like maybe people were thinking, obviously.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for joining us on our football chat this Thursday evening. Thanks to both David Sinnott and David Connolly as well. On the line, we will be talking a bit more about nutrition before the end of the programme. But the National Hunt season set to spring to life this weekend. And to tell us why, here's our own Jane Mangan.
Game on, racing.
Yes, John, when it comes to the National Hunt sphere, the names don't get much bigger than Manila Indo, NYLN, Frodon and Delta Work. And they are all in action at Down Royal this Saturday, a meeting that will be shown live on RT2 television at 1:30 this Saturday. But this week we were led to believe that Jack Kennedy would be retaining the mount on his Cheltenham Gold Cup hero Manila Indo, and that Davy Russell would be returning to the saddle on NYLN. But there was some musical chairs this morning when Gordon Elliott indicated that he would prefer his stable jockeys, Kennedy and Russell, to retain the mount on his horses for his owners, leaving the door open for Rachel Blackmore to return on NYLN and Manila Indo. So Delta Work, now ridden by Jack Kennedy in the Ladbrokes Champion Chase, Galvin, the mount of Davy Russell, Rachel Blackmore on Manila Indo, and don't forget a certain King George winner, Frodon, will be reunited with Bryony Frost, he making his seasonal reappearance for Paul Nicholls in a race that Nicholls has had such a rich history in before with the likes of Cato Starr. NYLN runs in the Join Racing TV Steeplechase, a second season novice chase, a grade 2 event, and it really looks like a perfect position for him to restart his career. We haven't seen NYLN since he pulled up injured at the Punchestown Festival. He fell at Cheltenham, but he is a superstar. Let's hope this is him getting his career back on track, and he will be the mount of Rachel Blackmore. So this is the start of the National Hunt season proper. The rain is falling. We might complain about that, but that does mean it's safer conditions for these horses to run. And hopefully, if you're all sitting at home enjoying the racing, you'll be able to be entertained by some of the best in the business.
Game on, racing. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
It's almost 7 o'clock on 2FM with My Expressway. Enjoy more ways to pay, including contactless, mobile and leap card. It's a game changer. Find out more at expressway.ie.
Game on 2FM.
And finally, time for our monthly nutrition slot. Thanks to our Game On sponsor, Green Farm. As always, we're joined by dietitian Orla Walsh. And today we're talking about how athletes and non-athletes can fuel their bodies against the cold and flus doing the round this winter. I've got a few friends, Orla, who've got the bug. It's not COVID, thankfully. It's just a lot rotten flu. How do we protect?
Yeah, so there's lots of bugs going on around at the moment with kids back to school and mingling together and people back in the workforce. So I suppose the most important thing is to eat enough. It sounds like such a basic thing, but our calories go into our body to fuel all the systems, and one of the systems is our immune system. And when we don't eat enough, so especially when we have huge calorie deficits or we're chronically under eating, our immune cells aren't as plentiful as we'd like. So the first thing would certainly be just eat enough, which sounds like an easy task for many.
Fluids?
Yeah, so fluids are incredibly important. So we need around 35 milliliters for every kilogram we weigh each day. If you're bigger, you might need just 30 milliliters. Now that's not including the losses that we have during exercise. So it is important for most people. I suppose a quick rule of thumb is most women would need 2 liters, most men 2.5. But make sure your urine is pale and that you need to go to the toilet every few hours. And that's how you know you're well hydrated.
Nice things to be discussing on a Thursday evening. Tell us terms of exercise. And I presume at this stage you would go along with the adage that prevention is better than the cure.
Oh, yes, certainly. So exercise is really good for our immune system. So if you don't exercise and you start to exercise, your immune system will be a bit stronger. However, athletes who have, you know, huge loads, so are doing lots and lots of exercise, like training each day, you know, putting their body under huge stress, they'll find that their immune system isn't as strong as the average Joe who goes and, you know, to the gym a few times a week. So if you are an athlete, you just need to mind your immune system that little bit more. So when we work with athletes, what we do is we focus on making sure they get enough calories, getting enough protein in each meal, hydration is good. But we also look at things like supplements. So, for example, an athlete might benefit from taking vitamin C to reduce the likelihood of illness. Now, the average Joe wouldn't necessarily need to do that. We make sure that their vitamin D supplies in their body are good, so we check their blood levels. And if they're deficient, we definitely do supplement. But most people need to take a supplement around 10 micrograms or 400 international units from around Halloween to St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. With athletes,
that's to get you through the winter months, that's what you're saying, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. Because it's a sunshine vitamin. So when the sun hits our skin, we produce vitamin D. So at our latitude and the amount of sun we get, we do need to supplement it because there's not many food sources of vitamin D. So eggs are a good source and oily fish. But we know, unfortunately, that a lot of people don't eat enough oily fish or fish in general. But that said, you still can't meet your vitamin D requirements with oily fish or eggs alone.
Just one thing you sent to me in a couple of notes that you sent. Exercise is a U-shaped curve. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so no exercise, your immune system isn't as strong as when you do a bit of exercise. But when you do lots of exercise, your immune system is weakened again. So that's why athletes have to be super duper careful. And even before COVID and we all started washing our hands a bit more and using alcohol gel and even wearing masks, a lot of our athletes when traveling would have worn masks on planes, would have worn masks in airports and would have been so diligent with hand hygiene. Just simply because their immune systems wouldn't be as strong, simply because of the stress they're putting on through the amount of training that they're doing. One thing that we do when they travel is not only focus on food hygiene and hand hygiene and stuff like that, we also get them to take a probiotic. So they take probiotics if they ever have to go on antibiotics or if they travel. And again, that can sometimes reduce their likelihood of illness and the severity of their illness. But if they do get sick, we use zinc lozenges. So they take a high dose of zinc as soon as they suspect they're getting sick, and that does reduce the severity of the illness and the duration, so it gets them better quicker. And depending on the athlete, we might also consider the likes of echinacea. So again, not the strongest level of evidence for echinacea, but studies show that it might be good for reducing the likelihood of illness, and it might be good for reducing the duration or severity of it.
Yeah, and again, combined with all of that, I suppose sleep is important.
Oh, sleep is the be-all and end-all. So athletes tend to need to sleep like toddlers, or how you want your toddler to sleep, where, overnight they're getting lost, certainly over 8 hours. But a lot of athletes then would also need to take naps. So I feel like my swimmers are always asleep. And
I do a lot of it myself. Since I was a teenager, actually, I nap in the afternoon, so...
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do. I find it amazing. I can do 5-minute naps, 15-minute naps, 20-minute naps, and it resets the body, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a hugely important skill to learn, and you can learn it. I'm not very good at it myself now, but our sleep is when our immune system really kicks up a gear, and also things that help recover the body, such as growth hormone and other things. So it's really important for rest and recovery of the body, and even the immune system in the brain. So a good enough, when you get plenty of sleep, you can remember things better and learn quicker. So I think sleep is important for lots of different aspects in terms of sport.
Dietitian Orla Walsh, thanks for joining us here on Game On, and thanks for all that good advice.
Game On 2FM.
I'm off for a lie down. No programme tomorrow on Game On. Damien is here on Monday for Marie. Tara Kumar is next. From John Kenny and all the crew, bye for now.
Live across the nation, this is 48 2FM. 2FM.